conference of the world today. The president had a, quote, successful conference about nuclear weapons. And clearly, you know, whether the Canadians have weapons or the others have weapons is an issue. But the real issue is Iran having nuclear weapons. That's the issue.
That's exactly it.
That wasn't a central part of the discussion. So what happens, though? I applaud Ron Lauder for this letter, for having the courage to raise the issue.
It's a good letter, definitely a good ad, and it makes all the key points. I mean, right now, the keystone of American policy in the Middle East appears to be to throw its long-term ally, Israel, under the proverbial bus, which, you know, is shocking, considered the treatment that we were affording to Syria, to Iran, the countries that have long-standing animosity toward the United States. So, obviously, this summit didn't deal with anything that had to do with Iran's nuclear weapons, and it is a game-changer for the region. But it's not just today how Obama is handling Israel. It's how he's handling Iran. It's how he's handling Syria. It's the entire region where he is sending the exact wrong signals to the wrong people, and we're going to see frightening results, I'm afraid.
I don't know if you're a reader of Bernard Lewis. He's a professor at Princeton. I've
Absolutely.
Had a chance to spend some time with Professor Lewis. One of the things that he talks about is the importance of strength in the Middle East, perception of strength. It's a cultural thing, and that there, if you're strong and perceived as strong, you get a certain reaction. If you're seen as weak, you get devoured. Is there a concern that this president in his efforts of outreach, and again, I want to reach out. I applaud every effort to try to talk to folks to resolve a problem. But at a certain point in time, do you get a sense that we're being played? And if you get a sense we're being played, if the Iranians think that they're playing us, does that fit into this sense of that we are weak and not strong? And what are the repercussions of that?
Absolutely the case. And Lee Smith wrote a book, The Strong Horse, actually, that came out recently, which really dives into this in a modern version. The way the United States is being perceived right now in the Arab world, it's interesting because it's not gaining any leverage or any points for the United States. Right now, Iran is very much emboldened, and so are all of its allies. I mean, when you look at Iran, it has had very consistent allies throughout the years. They can depend on Iran. When the United States throws its allies under the bus, and when it treats them poorly, even allies such as Egypt, people such as countries as Saudi Arabia, they look at the United States and say, if you can do that to Israel, it's not going to be hard for you to do that to us.
I had conversations, Matt, with Saudi officials where their question to me was, questioning our resolve vis-a-vis Iran, or whether we were tough enough with them. I think sometimes folks kind of see a monolithic Middle East, and it's not that at all. Even within the region, Iran is considered a threat, and our willingness to kind of deal with that in firm and forthright manner certainly gets questioned. If I can segue a little bit, because I think there's a pattern here of how we treat our friends versus how we treat our enemies. Poland, Czechoslovakia, their leadership went out of the way to work with the United States at great risk and say that they're prepared to have missile defense pieces in their territory. The rationale, at least the public rationale, was that the Russians were upset with this, that we're going to be deploying missile defense systems in Czechoslovakia and Poland, and in an effort to have better relations with Russia, that in an effort to get them on our side vis-a-vis Iran, we pulled the plug on the system. And by the way, without even telling our allies, as I understand, there wasn't even a call ahead of time, a day before, to the officials in these countries that had, at political risk, put themselves out to say we're going to stand with the U.S. So all of a sudden, you know, they, in effect, kind of read about it. And the bottom line is we didn't get anything from Russia out of it. They're still playing the game. They're still questioning the level of sanctions. And so in an effort to, you know, somehow curry favor with Moscow, we pull the rug out from under our allies, folks that have been there with us, and we get nothing for it. And so the first priority of government is national security. In the Middle East, strength is a virtue. And my great fear is that we're not showing that in the Middle East. We're not showing it in Central Europe. We're not showing it in Latin America. One of our great friends, Uribe, in Colombia, he's kind of out there. He's got Chavez pressuring them. He's got the Ecuadorians supporting the what they call the FARC, the guerrillas there. And we make nice to the Ecuadorians. We kind of hug or embrace Chavez. Something is amiss.
It's not just actually that we're treating our allies poorly, and by doing so, we're actually getting nothing in return across the board. There is a structural deficiency in the thinking of American foreign policy right now.
Well, we're going to get back to that. We'll get back to that structural deficiency. I'm visiting with Matt Brodsky, he's director of the Jewish Policy Center. We're talking about Israel-American relations. We're talking about Iranian threat having a nuclear weapon. We're talking about weakness in foreign policy, deferring to our enemies and pulling the rug out from our friends. This is Jason Lewis Show on Radio Free America, 866-989-5855. Norm Coleman, sitting in for Jason Lewis. Mr. Wright will be back tomorrow night. He'll be broadcasting from Bend, Oregon, WBND. This is the Jason Lewis Show on Radio Free America. I may have to, if I was here another day, I may have to do something with the bumper music, by the way.
Oh, you got some suggestions? The guy in that chair usually does, so feel free to keep it going.
And I was a roadie for a rock and roll band in the 1960s.
Which one was that?
A group called 10 Years After.
Oh, maybe I can track down
Alvin Lee. Alvin Lee was lead guitarist, Leo Lyons bass player. They played at Woodstock. I left the band right before the concert at Woodstock so that I could enjoy the concert, which I did. So next time I'm on, I'll pick out the bumper music. We're talking foreign policy. I got Matt Brodsky, director of Jewish Policy Center, on talking about Israel and talking about strength and foreign policy and the importance of strength in the Middle East. You know, Matt, just an observation. I think this president really wants America to be more well-liked.
I prefer that America would be more well-respected.
And I think that's the key, that foreign policy, the goal of foreign policy is not about being well-liked. It is about being respected. And there is a huge difference between, you know, I kind of like you guys, but do you respect and will you act then in a way that is more consistent with, you know, our interest, which it should be our goal. When I say our interest, I think another thing is at times I'm not sure this president's comfortable with the responsibility of, you know, being the president of this great superpower. He made a comment the other day. It was just a little comment. At the close of the summit, where he talked about, well, you know, whether we like it or not, you know, we're a superpower. We are.
Something that's embraced. We're losing friends right now and influencing no one. Dale Carnegie would be so disappointed at this moment. It's when you talk about there's a structural deficiency because the United States right now is leaning toward a theory where it links all the Middle Eastern conflicts together, which it doesn't seem to understand that Iran is getting a nuclear weapon and is going in that direction because it's a strategic choice, because this is something that will ensure that no matter how rogue their behavior, the West can't do anything to them. This is in their interest. This has nothing to do with America's diplomatic communication skills. Neither does our diplomatic communication skills come into play when it comes to Syria. We announced an ambassador is going to go back in February. And the next thing that Bashar al-Assad, the president out there, does is to invite Mahmoud Ahmadinejad and Hassan Nasrallah for lunch. And they pledge that they are going to keep the resistance going. Just yesterday, this news broke, and it's not even being covered by mainstream media enough. Syria has been shipping Scud missiles, Scud-D missiles, to Hezbollah in Lebanon. This is a complete game changer in the region. This is how now Hezbollah has the ability to hit all of Israel. These are weapons that can be affixed with chemical and biological weapons. When you want to look at a scary scenario in the region, it is Iran having nuclear weapons and Hezbollah, who is under the thumb and control of Iran, able to respond with massive missile strikes that can include chemical and biological weapons against Israel. This is not a tenable situation. And in the meantime, what we see is the main thrust of American policy is against Israel and building settlements, apparently.
And Matt, let me say this, that Israel, the settlement of the Israeli-Palestinian issue, which is an important issue, it's a critical issue.
Absolutely.
That settlement is that's not what Iran getting a nuclear weapon is about. That issue could be resolved. Iran is getting a nuclear weapon and moving in that direction at breakneck speed as we continue to talk. And they'll do that regardless of what happens with Israel and the Palestinians.
This is a structural deficiency that I'm speaking of, because if the belief in Washington today is that if you can force now, it appears, a settlement on the Israeli-Palestinian issue, on the conflict, it will make all these other issues easier. It'll make it easier for American troops in Iraq, in Afghanistan, and it will make dealing with Iran's nuclear weapons, it'll make that easier. It's hard to see how any of this affects Russia or China's calculation when it comes to sanctions, or even how sanctions at this point would even make a difference.
And again, let me just break in. Just catch your breath there. It's not that this is an unimportant issue. It's a critical issue. There's no question about that. But if you look at Russia, China, each has their own interest. They've got economic interest in dealing with Iran. They've got economic interest, China, in its energy needs. China has a voracious energy appetite. And so in the end, yeah, we need a resolution of the Israeli-Palestinian issue. We have to recognize who is our ally, who is our friend. We also have to realize that if the Iranians get a nuclear weapon, then it's Katie by the door, and we're simply not doing enough right now to make sure that Iran doesn't get a nuclear weapon. We have talked, and we have talked, and we have talked. And the longer we talk, the more they continue to move in a path that is dangerous for all of us. Talk has got to stop. We need action.
It was a teenage wedding, and the old folks wished them well. You could see that Pierre did truly love the mademoiselle.
Brendan, that's certainly not 10 years after.
That's
10 years after. This is Norm Coleman sitting in for Jason Lewis. Jason will be in Bend, Oregon at KBND. I think I may have said W before. I said, you know, George W., my friend, and I had kind of those W's out, the George H.W., so a lot of W's, but it's our good affiliate in Bend, Oregon, KBND, and Jason will be back with you tomorrow. We've talked about the greatest issues facing America. The first part of this of our show, we talked about the greatest domestic issue, spending and debt that threatens to undermine the American way of life, threatens to steal our kids' future. And now we've been talking about national security and the threat of Iran getting a nuclear weapon. This president's, I think, less than tough approach to security issues, treatment of how we deal with friends and enemies that is not making friends and is uplifting enemies. And I think that's very problematic. Carlos, you've been holding a long time. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you? I want to say hi to a great senator that we have.
Very humble. Thank you.
And, you know, we miss you a lot. I think we miss having someone with common sense over there in Washington. But, you know, that was from shenanigans. That's my opinion. Hey, I want to touch base with two things after this. First of all, I was talking to your screener. I think you're exactly right about we are dissing our friends. You know, I'm a Puerto Rican. You know, I have a lot of people who are Hispanic Americans, and, you know, we talk about all these things, and they're pro-American, and they're really concerned about Obama, basically, all these moves with Fidel Castro, all these dictators of South America and Chavez and stuff like that, and they're really worried and concerned. You know what I mean? And I think we are sending the wrong message.
They should, by the way, they should be concerned. The way we treated the situation in Honduras, Ecuador now is moving into the Chavez tilt. And you know, what we do is, you know, we talk and we embrace and it's not getting us anywhere. It's not helping us. And our friends like Uribe in Colombia, are oftentimes felt left out. We've had a trade agreement with Colombia that's been packed on ice, an agreement that would help American business, by the way, give access into Colombia. Mm-hmm. But you've got, AFL-CIO, you know, in opposition. And so we diss our friends, we embrace our enemies, and I don't think it serves America's security and international interest.
And I think, you know, like United States also, and this is my personal opinion, I like to study history, and I'm going back to my other topic, which is China. We'd be basically focusing too much on China, all this trade or whatever, and I think it backfired to us. I think on the beginning we thought, okay, we are going to export to China because they're going to buy our products because they have a large number, you know, but by my personal opinion, we created China. You know, China 45 years ago, they don't have an economy running. They don't have nothing to build. They don't have nothing. They have benefit for the transfer of technology, and I can talk about that because I'm an engineer. You know, I'm particularly being affected by that because my job options right now, every day are less and less and less to find a job in this country that I love. You know, and because we were afraid about the Chinese, but then we neglected Latin America, which I think was a similar size market, which was closer to us and maybe more friendly to us. And I think maybe this is something that we should reconsider in the future.
And China, by the way, Carlos, China, they're holding our debt. I mean, just think about it. They hold our debt. How does that impact our relations? How does that impact our ability to force China to be tough on Iran when they've got about $743 billion, you know, worth of you know, our debt, and if they don't continue to buy it, we've got big problems.
Mm-hmm.
So it is difficult. Foreign policy is impacted by those kind of relationships, and in the end, we end up not having the right thing done. And I think so, you know, look at China and look at debt and ask yourself the question of how that impacts our ability to get them to do the things that we need them to do. We saw that in Darfur where they were slow to be supportive of doing the right thing there. And we're seeing that right now as this issue that we've talked about earlier about Iran getting a nuclear weapon is played out in the Security Council, where both the Chinese and the Russians have been very, very hesitant to step forward and embrace any kind of serious sanctions.
Yeah, because, you know, actually, China has a problem for resources, you know. And, you know, they're looking to Iran, okay, they are a rich oil country. And they're looking that strategically. Like I said, honestly, the Chinese don't care. You know, people say, well, you know, they should care about the U.S. because they're our, you know, we are our major consumer. Right, you know, most products have been transferred from here to there. But guess what? They're only thinking about themselves. You know what I mean? I think, and actually, to be honest with you, when I saw the other day, I was watching some picture on the internet. I see President Obama basically bowing and kissing Chiang Tao or whatever what his name it is. You know, like I said, oh, how things are really, really, really turning.
And Carlos, let me let you go, but I got to say, that's again, I don't want to be accused of just kind of hitting on the president because he makes a little comment there, he bows there. But there is something about Americans we don't bow to anybody. And there is something about, I just think in this president's nature that, you know, he wants to kind of bow down. He gets back, Matt, you're still on the line there. It kind of gets back to being liked, rather than being respected.
Exactly. And in Latin America, we should also look at Iran and Hezbollah's rising influence in Latin America in drug trade and in smuggling across the border. This is a very big national security issue, and again, there are state sponsors of this program.
And I talked about Ecuador before. I mean, you have Iran reaching out through the Chavez link, spreading its tentacles
right
in Latin America, with those countries now kind of reaching out and bolstering this regime, which is not our friend. Let me go to the tough question, because we've kind of veered off a little bit here, but I want to get back. Iran is moving forward, getting a nuclear weapon. What can Israel do about it? What should the United States do about it?
The United States has very limited options when it comes to sanctions right now. I mean, any sanctions that we're looking at should have been they should have been applied, if they could have been applied, at any time earlier, even during the Bush administration, and that didn't happen, then that's unfortunate. Right now we're talking about watering down sanctions. It's really hard to see how that would do anything. The thing the United States could do, and it would be extraordinarily difficult, is to say any company in any country that does business with Iran, then we won't do business with that country. And that would have dramatic effects in our economy, but would really grind Iran's economy to a halt and present the regime with a set of choices. And they are not currently being presented a set of choices. Short of that, there's a issue of whether Israel is going to have to do some form of military strike, which I believe is something that could happen. A problem with this is that if Israel does something, the United States is going to get blamed just the same. We're going to deal with the exact same fallout, especially in the region, and whatever is done will probably be done a little less well than if the United States were involved in it. So the United States has kind of slipped into a deterrence footing, and that kind of footing is based on the mutually assured destruction, which does not apply to a regime such as Iran.
And as a result, Iran keeps moving forward. Let me ask the question that goes beyond the Iran stuff. This president, clearly from those concerned about Israel, there are questions about the path that he's taken. The relationship has deteriorated. Netanyahu is treated like a third world potentate. He's kind of left there while the president goes to have dinner. Questions about American resolve and supporting Israel, whether they have to take action against Iran. And yet American Jews still support this president in overwhelming numbers.
It's an incredible statistic.
Can you explain that to me?
Well, it's hard to explain because I myself do not, but the crux of the issue between Israelis and Palestinians is that there, in fact, are things that can be done. But the problem is that we've gone about it the wrong way. This is a crisis that Washington has manufactured. With housing settlements in what is East Jerusalem, settlements are a big issue, but Netanyahu agreed to a moratorium in the West Bank. No Israeli prime minister had ever done that before. That actually should have been considered a big move.
But I got to say, Matt, I don't think the issue is the best. I'm going to be real blunt. American Jews support the president because he's a Democrat. And Israel isn't the principal issue for most American Jews. There are other issues out there, and it's a social agenda. I heard Norm Podoritz once say it's among many American Jews, the vast majority. It's as if Moses came down from the mountain, he had in the two tablets, and one of them said abortion, the other said gay rights, and that's it. And Israel is not at the center of the discussion. And if it was, I think you'd see some different numbers. You'd see, I think, a different reality.
There are several explanations, and a completely off the foreign policy topic. One explanation is that if you look at the history of Jews in the world, have come from socialist places. They've come from Eastern Europe. In Israel, it was a socialist society that has been transitioning into becoming a capitalist society. That form of communal giving has always been part of the Jewish memory and a part of the Jewish past. How that is, how Israel itself makes the transition to a more capitalist system and less of a... I mean, let's look at it. When you're forming Israel, if it were a capitalist system, then Jews would not have bought land for a country. It was necessary then, and then they're making a transition. In the United States, many Jews are second, third generation here from Eastern Europe. And, not to oversimplify, but that is, one form of explanation.
Let me jump in I'll give you a contrary perspective, and since I got the microphone, Matt, Listen, the reality is Israel right now is a bastion of economic growth and capitalism, technology, innovation. American Jews are entrepreneurial. It's when the only thing you got that you can kind of carry is what you can carry with you, because they can take your land, they can take your property, they can't take what's between your ears. Okay, so entrepreneurial, small business, all those things should weigh in our favor. Again, unfortunately, for a lot of American Jews, it goes back, I think it goes back to FDR. It goes back to Lyndon Johnson and Barry Goldwater and the Civil Rights Act in the 60s. I think that's history. But I am optimistic that American Jews today, when they look at where this president is going with, by the way, capitalism, with the market, when they look at where this president is going with Israel and questioning whether the resolve is there, and they look at the German relationship, I think things are going to change, Matt. So I am more optimistic that more and more American Jews will simply not vote the way their grandma or grandpa did. I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. True story, I never met either a Lutheran or Republican until I went to college. There weren't any. And so in the end, it's the history that you grow up with. But I think the future is different, and I think this president is giving American Jews an opportunity to look and say, you know something, I question, Mr. President, whether the path you're pursuing is the right path for those of us that care about Israel, care about the free market, care about debt, care about our kids' future.
I truly hope so. The classic issues that have been considered a Democrat issue, humanitarian issues in the world, the things that Jews have really stood behind have now flipped completely. It's amazing. I'm speaking to a Arab American friend of mine who is telling me that really, if you're going to support human rights, such a fundamental liberal issue, you basically have to be a Republican these days if you're going to support it in the Middle East.
And particularly, and I'll let you go on this, Matt, particularly if you talk about the rights of women in the Middle East, where they have in Israel and they don't have in other countries. Norm Coleman, sitting in for Jason Lewis, Radio Free America, 866-989-5855.